Gordon Jiva is the first in the series Living the Bhagavad Gita Way by Swami Surya Devananda. Dedicated to Gurudev Swami Shivananda, this series is based on the translation and arrangement of verses in the book Gita Meditations by Swami Shivananda, published by the Divine Life Society, Rishikesh, India. This series is a study of a better way of living based on the teachings of the Bhagavad Gita. I am grateful to the Divine Life Society for their permission to use Gita Meditations by Swami Shivananda, whose translation and flow we will follow. Since this offering is in the week before Guru Purnima, it is worth looking into it a little to understand how things were in days gone by. Earlier, there was a sense of naturalness in everything, including spiritual pursuit. Let us take our minds back in time a little to understand what we have lost, as we will have to restore naturalness that is missing outside within our hearts and minds. Guru Purnima is the day when the Guru is venerated. It is not so much the personality of the Guru, but what Guru represents. It is said that on this day, all perfected ones, masters and sages, shower their blessings unreservedly on those who sincerely tread the path they have trodden themselves. Historically, this day also heralded the start of the monsoon season in India. Living natural lives, seekers reduced all unnecessary activity to use this period for deep study. This was not an academic type of learning, but of turning to the teachers, scriptures, or both, to have all their doubts cleared for their immersive practice. Thus, study became the primary sadhana or practice, while the other practices were still continued, but with lesser emphasis. When it rains, the air is charged with a lot of energy, which raises one's alertness and concentration becomes easier. Just think, when you are driving far and you feel fatigued, you roll down the windows, sit upright, and feel refreshed and alert. Later, when it became cooler, the climate was best suited to deep meditation, and for this, seekers either reduced their other activities even further or took to a period of isolation for deep meditation. During this period, local villagers often provided what they could to help seekers in the form of food so that they could continue their practice with full focus. Spring brought fair weather, and the fields were ready for a good harvest. There was an air of thanksgiving all about, and seekers often visited the villages and gave talks from their direct experience, reminding people of the goal of life and its path. So now, the seekers gave back to the local villagers from their spiritual harvest. Thus, spiritual living and normal living too flowed along with the seasons, each one doing his own duty and helping each other without any dictates to do so. Regulation and mandates numb the spirit and make effort mechanical at best. Prayer is the foundation and pivot of spiritual life. When you pray, You must feel your relationship with God. It is from there that you will relate or commune. For most, the relationship will evolve as you evolve spiritually. Let us start our daily sessions with some prayers.
O adorable Lord of mercy and love, salutations and prostrations unto Thee. Thou art omnipresent, omnipotent, and omniscient. Thou art Satchidananda, existence, consciousness, bliss, absolute. Thou art the indweller of all beings. Grant us an understanding heart, equal vision, balanced mind, faith, devotion, and wisdom. Grant us inner spiritual strength to resist temptation and to control the mind. Free us from egoism, lust, greed, hatred, and anger. Fill our hearts with divine virtues. Let us behold Thee in all these names and forms. Let us serve Thee in all these names and forms. Let us ever remember Thee. Let us ever sing Thy glories. Let Thy name be ever on our lips. Let us abide in Thee forever and ever. Om Shanti, Shanti, Shanti.
Brahmanandam Paramasukadam Kevalam Jnanamurtim Dvandvatitam Gaganasadrisham Tattvamasya Dilakshim Ekam Nityam Vimalamachalam Sarvadi Sakshibhutam Bhavatitam Trigunaraitam Sadgurum Tam Namami. I prostrate to that Sadguru, the Brahman, who is bliss, who is the giver of supreme happiness, who is absolute knowledge, who is beyond the pair of opposites, who is vast like the ether, who is attained through assertions like Tattvamasi, who is one, eternal, and changeless, the witness of the mind, who transcends all changes and modifications, who is devoid of the three modes of Prakriti. Vasudevam sutam devam kamsachanuramardhanam Devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagat gurum. I salute Lord Krishna, the world teacher, the son of Vasudeva, the destroyer of Kamsa and Chanur, the supreme bliss of Devaki. Om Tat Sat Purushottamam Samgaram Shantam Vyat Sannibham Maya Titam Khanda Bodha Paramananda Atmaratna Karam Vishwasiti Yudhyantam Ekritam Tridaiva Bhantam Vibhum Satyam Jnanam Anantakoti Nihir Jyoti Swarupam Bhaje. I take refuge in that one immortal Purushottama, who is known as Om Tat Sat, who is the Guru of all, who is peaceful and all-pervading like ether, who transcends Maya, who is the ocean of the indivisible consciousness and the supreme bliss of the Self, who is the beginning, the middle, and the end of the universe, who, the one Lord, appears as though He is threefold, who is truth, knowledge, and massive effulgence, like endless scrolls of suns put together. Sarvo Upanishado Gavo Dugdha Gopalanandana Partho Vatsa Sudhir Bhokta Dugdham Gita Amritam Mahate. All the Upanishads are the cows. The milker is Krishna, the cowherd boy. Arjuna is the calf. Men of purified intellect are the drinkers. The milk is the great nectar of the Gita. Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryam Karvavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastu Mavidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Om. May He protect us both, teacher and pupil. May He cause us both to enjoy the bliss of mukti. May we both exert to find out the true meaning of the scriptures. May our studies be fruitful. May we never quarrel with each other. Om peace, om peace, om peace. Today is the first session, and our theme is God and Jiva. The four subtopics that we will cover are prayer to the Lord, nature of Brahman, immanence of God, and immortality of the soul. We often hear that life has become artificial today. True, but is life just what is out there, or also how life is lived? What is out there is out there, and will continue to change this way and that over time. No matter how things are, what prevents us from living naturally? And just what is natural living? What comes to mind when talking about natural living is simple living, eating natural food, etc. But these have to do with doing. What does it mean to be natural? To be natural is to be true to our real nature. Our personality, with its likes and dislikes, is not our true nature because we are aware of it and we can change it. Now, who is it that is aware of this personality and can change it? That self does not seem to be disturbed by anything in life, as it is aware of all things, including the disturbances. The self has seen this body and conditions changed, but it has stayed the same, silently being aware of all, unaffected and beyond aging. This self is not in us, but our very self, stable, beyond the afflictions of the body and mind. It is the sun within that is obscured, so to say, by the clouds of ignorance or conditioning. This ignorance or conditioning limits the self, just as clouds seem to hide the sun, though the sun is always present and ever luminous. The personality, with its name and appearance, is useful for communicating and getting things done, but it is not our true nature, as we are always aware of it. Awareness is lost when the personality turns away from the self, which is its source, and faces all that is out there, seeing everyone and everything as apart from each other and oneself. Three factors make appearance seem very real. The substratum of our being or self is real. Two, the substratum of all people and things have the same substratum or self as their source and support. And three, we have conviction in the reality of all that is perceived as very real. The reality of our being recognizes the reality of all and in all, and gets cemented by the reality of our conviction. And so, all that is perceived feels absolutely real. Now, we are not saying that what appears is not, but it is not what we make it out to be. When we give the value of reality to all that is perceived, we feel the need to give some sort of value to things, for ease of dealing with things, so we are not overwhelmed. So, I like this, and this I don't like, or not as much compared to what I prefer. So first, we give a sense of reality to all that is perceived. Secondly, we give it a value which is subjective and not inherent in the perceived. Third, we react to our own values and not to what is perceived. We would like more of what is liked and less or none of what is not liked or preferred. We forget that these values were given by us in the first place, and we get stuck in a self-tightening cycle of assigning values and running after all that we have given a positive value and running away from all that we have given a negative value. This, my friends, is a sure recipe for tremendous confusion, which will lead to much inner conflict, and trying to keep things in balance would be the only relief we know. The Bhagavad Gita tells us that confusion, conflict, and the resulting symptoms of hurt and hurting others is not necessary or a part of life, and that afflictions of pain that have not come can and should be avoided. The Gita tells us that problems do not exist in what is out there, but in our feelings and our reactions to them, and that mastery of mind or self-mastery is the way to sane and peaceful living. Life has to be lived skillfully. Every action or response has to be a masterstroke on the canvas of life. For this, we must first understand the nature of truth, God, or the Absolute. Our own essential nature, the relationship between God and the individual, including all that we perceive. Now, you may feel that this will take a long time to know by direct experience. Perhaps true. But in the journey to know by direct experience, we can start off with what others have discovered as the truth by their verification or direct experience, and seek to verify or know it for ourselves by ourselves. The Gita's message has been verified and is verifiable by any who choose to know. The path of verification is known as sadhana, which is translated as spiritual practice, but is better reworded as practice of the spirit or the practice of spirituality. The term practice is only used because we fail to get verification of the sort in the first attempt. Just as a scientist goes back again and again, but changing each time as he knows what does not work, till he finds what does work. Similarly, we too must go back again and again, but not the same and not in the same way, as each attempt must teach you something by which you can focus better. And we go back with this sharper focus till there is direct verification of the truth. The Gita tells us that living life without confusion or conflict and the pursuit of truth are not opposed to each other. Life can be useful in correcting wrong values assigned, and this leads to an immediate inner expansion as we go about our lives. This way of living, where life is lived expertly, so it can be free of hurt and hurting others, while at the same time being the foundation of your spiritual pursuit, is the Gita way of life. Bhagavad Gita is translated as Song of God, and to live with the rhythm of the Song of God or God's song is to live naturally, or as things are in their true nature. This way of living corrects all missteps and at the same time gives us a sure path to travel, so our lives are both free of sorrow and a movement towards joy that endures. Before we get into some of the verses, keep in mind that the Gita has several dimensions. Firstly, being that it was narrated by Sanjaya to the blind king Dhritarashtra, it is a narration. We are going to skip over the verses that were more for the information of the blind king to whom this dialogue was narrated. Secondly, being that it was a series of answers and solutions to Arjuna's doubts, it was knowledge of the truth of things. Thirdly, having spoken about the truth, the Gita is very extensive and thorough in its treatment of the different ways to experience the truth. This last portion is what makes it a Yoga Shastra or scripture of yoga and is often overlooked. We will be looking into the important verses on yoga or sadhana over two evenings, Wednesday and Thursday, or the third and fourth sessions. We start at the water's edge with Arjuna's prayer on being graced with the vision of the cosmic form of Krishna. The teachings that follow paint a wonderful picture of God as all, till the vision returns to us and roots within as God in all. But it is still difficult to let go of this ego personality which we have grown so accustomed to. And so the Gita tells us of the immortality of the soul, the indwelling presence of God. It is only when we truly feel we already have or are close to something much bigger and worthwhile than these many other things that we run after from morning to night will we let go and allow ourselves to return to our true nature. In the first 11 verses of the 10th chapter, Krishna tells Arjuna about his essential nature. Hearing this, Arjuna responds with the below verse. Thou art the Supreme Brahman, the Supreme Abode, the Supreme Purifier, Eternal, Divine Person, the Primeval God, the Unborn, and Omnipresent. Much of Krishna's revelation that continues in the first 11 verses of the 10th chapter was already spoken of earlier in the 7th and 9th chapters. This is very important as we are assured that if we are sincere in trying to remember God in and through our life, we will not be forsaken, and God will also continue to reach out to us for our own welfare. Truth is not difficult to understand, but difficult to stand under or accept wholeheartedly so it can be lived by. We will come back to this verse to understand better what faith is. A few more thoughts on this right now. Krishna answers Arjuna's questions with further revelations until a request in the 11th chapter is made to see his imperishable form if he is found worthy of the vision. Arjuna's sincerity is already known to the Lord, and so there is no hesitation. Krishna answers, Behold, O Arjuna, my forms by the hundreds and thousands, of different sorts, divine, and of various colors and forms. Arjuna is not able to see this because he has not risen to the level of purity to be able to behold such a tremendous sight. And this is why Krishna says without hesitation, But thou art not able to behold me with thine own eyes. I give thee the divine eye. Behold my lordly yoga. Because of the grace of the Lord, Arjuna was able to behold the cosmic form of the Lord, and beholding it, the outpourings from his heart are in the verses that follow. Thou art the imperishable, the supreme being who should be known. Thou art the great treasure house of this universe. Thou art the imperishable protector of the eternal Dharma. Thou art the ancient person I deem. Thou art the primal God, the ancient Purusha, the supreme refuge of this universe, the knower, the knowable, and the supreme abode. By thee is the universe pervaded, O being of infinite forms. Thou art Vayu, Yama, Agni, Varun, the moon, the creator, and the grandfather. Salutations, salutations unto thee 1,000 times, and again salutations, salutations unto thee. Salutations unto thee from front and behind, salutations to thee on every side, O all. Infinite in power and prowess, thou pervadest all, wherefore thou art all. Thou art the father of this world, moving and unmoving. Thou art to be adored by this world. Thou, the greatest guru, for none there exists who is equal to thee. How can there be then another superior to thee in the three worlds, O being of unequal power? Friends, we too are told in the scriptures and teachings of great masters who have had God realization, the truth that God alone is. This is called non-duality. But our minds and our hearts are so saturated with ideas of other that the feelings of non-duality do not lodge in the heart firmly. It is easy to understand, but difficult to accept wholeheartedly, so we can live with it as the ego, with all of its self-centered ways, must be set aside for this universal vision. Still, if we persevere and keep trying, we too will receive God's grace as Arjuna did and is stated in the opening verse of the 10th chapter. Again, O mighty armed Arjuna, listen to my supreme word, which I shall declare to thee, who art beloved, for thy welfare. But we have to be mighty armed just like Arjuna was, in that we have to fight our lower nature and its promptings daily, not daily, but each moment, so that we constantly and in all ways persevere towards the good. This single-minded devotion towards the good matures into devotion to God and makes us beloved to God, who, just as Arjuna, will reach out to us again and again for our welfare. Among these verses that we have just read today, the first verse of the prayers of Arjuna was based on what the Lord revealed to him as his essential nature. Arjuna had not seen the cosmic form for himself, but he still had faith for the declaration that he had heard. Now remember, Arjuna and Krishna were also related in a way and had known each other for a very long time. They had a different kind of relationship. This changed when Arjuna surrendered in chapter 2, verse 6, with these words, "My heart is overpowered by the taint of pity. My mind is confused as to duty. I ask thee, tell me decisively what is good for me. I am thy disciple. Instruct me who has taken refuge in thee." A slightly different theme but similar teachings are found in the Yoga Vasishta. When Vasishta tells Rama these words at the end of the second chapter, O Rama, till such time as this wisdom arises directly in you, take recourse to the knowledge transmitted by the great teachers. Let's go back to Arjuna. Arjuna did not have his own experience as yet, but his surrender was sincere, and the sincerity of his faith gave him enough courage to stand on it and truly accept Krishna's words. Now, having been graced by the vision of the cosmic form, Arjuna's heart burst out with the beautiful words that we have just heard. See, my friends, faith has nothing to do with others, outer conditions, or time. It is our feeling completely. We too have read the scriptures and heard many teachings. Why does the faith that will allow us or enable us to act on it unflinchingly in life not take root? What can stop us in this endeavor of faith? What is for our highest good is and must be investigated. But it is also wisdom to rely on faith of those that have gone before us or preceded us while we continue our own investigation of the truth and have our own realization. Used to seeing all as distinct and apart from ourselves, we see God too as a special kind of being, someplace, but not here in this world. The verses in this section are meant to raise the bar of understanding to God's pervasiveness till the heart can accept God's eminence. In this first verse among the verses on the nature of Brahman, Lord Krishna praises that which is to be known in order to create in Arjuna or any listener an intense desire to know it. If you are told that this one medicine will cure all from a very reliable source, you will surely want to try it. I will declare that which has to be known, knowing which one attains to immortality, the beginningless supreme Brahman called neither being nor non-being. Arjuna has already beheld the cosmic form, and so Krishna raises Arjuna's vision further by stating that he is the inner ruler, the innermost self, support and substratum of all. All that seems to exist as distinct or apart and so very real are so only because of the limiting adjuncts of the body, mind, senses and their activities. There is the often used analogy of the snake in the rope. On a dark night, when one sees a rope coiled up, mistaking it for a snake can cause real reactions towards it. But the rope is not affected by the illusion as it rests in the beholder's mind only. Until the illusion is let go, we will always see the snake and never the rope, though the snake alone exists. With hands and feet everywhere, with eyes, heads and mouths everywhere, with ears everywhere, he exists in the worlds, enveloping all. Shining by the functions of all the senses, yet without senses. Unattached, yet supporting all. Devoid of qualities, yet the experiencer. Without and within all beings, the unmoving and also the moving, because of its subtlety, unknowable and near and far away is that. He is undivided, yet he exists as if divided in beings. He is to be known as the supporter of beings. He dissolves and generates all these. That the light of lights is said to be beyond darkness, knowledge, the knowable, and the goal of knowledge, seated in the hearts of all. To see the rope for what it is requires for us or to have the sense or to rely on our own light and not the borrowed light of the mind, which acts as a prism and generates the illusion. Let us take a simple situation. Someone is nagging you about something. Now, my friends, what is actually going on? There is someone, and he is doing something called nagging. You are also there, and in you, something seems to express itself or express displeasure within at first and then wants to act out. Why is this person nagging me? What have I done? This feeling may want to act out as, I should tell him to stop, or that he is being hurtful, or whatever. The feeling and its wanting to act out are not what is happening out there or what that person is doing. It is what is happening within. And all things within are done by you only, either in the present or have been repeated in the past so many times so that the vritti or psychosis or pattern has been infused by your energy to make it seem so very real that you are feeling that way. You are not feeling that way, or at least I hope so, as you are aware of this. If you are aware of this, it is possible to go your way, and as you do, to let that vritti fall away, just as the situation falls away. In this, you identify with the awareness or the light of your own being rather than the light of the vritti, the mind, conditioning, or any other limiting adjunct. And identifying with the awareness within us is a gradual movement towards facing that light. Neither doth the sun illumine there, nor the moon, nor the fire. Having gone thither, they return not. This is my supreme abode. We are told in this verse that the supreme abode, or God, is self-illuminated, and it is His illumination alone that illumines all. In our spiritual quest, we have to bring this to life by resorting to the deepest reach of that which knows or is aware, and this extricates us from the limited senses, mind, intellect, their operation, and the powerful vrittis that fight hard to sustain their grip on you. The Katha Upanishad has a very similar verse as the closing verse of the fifth valli. The sun does not shine there, nor do the moon and the stars, nor do lightning shine, much less this fire. When he shines, everything shines after him by his light. All these shine. The first section of the verses today were prayerful verses by Arjuna. One when the Lord told him about his essential nature, and the others that followed, a spontaneous outpouring on beholding the cosmic form. Now, the bar of understanding is raised even further, from God's pervasiveness as all to God's eminence or His presence in all, thus dissolving the idea of I as an independent reality. Though the verses that follow are from different parts of the Gita, the first from the seventh chapter, etc., it is better to hear these now after the two-step prayers of Arjuna and Krishna's declaration of the truth. There is nothing whatsoever higher or other than me, O Arjuna. All this is strung on me as clusters of beads on a string. I am the Self, O Arjuna, seated in the hearts of all beings. I am the beginning, the middle, and also the end of all beings. Whatever is the seed of all beings, that also am I, O Arjuna. There is no being whether moving or unmoving, that can exist without me. Whatever being there is, glorious, prosperous, or powerful, know thou to be a manifestation of a part of my splendor. This particular verse should allow us to let go of the attitudes we can sometimes have towards people who are glorious, prosperous, or powerful. Whether on good footing or otherwise, as Krishna makes it very clear that all these are a manifestation or a part of his splendor. But of what avail to thee is the knowledge of all these details, O Arjuna? I exist, supporting this whole world by one part of myself. Once again, the question of faith comes into play. Faith and belief are two different things. Faith asks us to accept the hypothesis while we exert to have our own experience and can confirm that, yes, it is indeed so. Belief is accepting someone else's declaration and the buck stops there, and the doubts and the wrong notions stay within just where they are. There is a verse in the Yoga Vashishta which refines this thought and tells us what is worth inquiring into and what to avoid. One should inquire into that which is truly the uncaused cause of all substances, which is yet beyond all such causation. This alone is worth inquiring into, for this alone is essential. Why inquire into the non-essential? Often scientists do start with some sort of theory or feeling about a theory and keep experimenting till they have a discovery or a direct experience. Too much theory is not good, as we can get caught up in a cycle of finding verbal answers to everything or the mind game. Just enough to run with, till, like fuel, we have our own experience, and that is the better way. For I am the abode of Brahman, the immortal and the immutable, of everlasting dharma and of absolute bliss. The Lord dwells or abides in the heart of all beings, O Arjuna, causing all beings by his elusive power to revolve as if mounted on a machine. These last two verses from the 14th and 18th chapter cinch together the transcendence and the eminence of God in the most beautiful way. I am the final abode, the immortal, and the absolute, and I also abide in the heart of all beings. If we remind ourselves of these wonderful words, we will have the strength to deal with all that comes and strengthen our faith by which we will move towards our own experience. Still, the heart struggles to accept God's omnipresence, especially his eminence. In throwing light on the immortality of the soul, these verses tell us that letting go of the ego or individuality is not a loss, but the only way to any real gain, as in letting go of that which perishes, we discover the immortal. Know that by whom all this is pervaded to be indestructible. None can cause the destruction of that, the imperishable. The self is not born, nor does the self ever die. After having been, the self again does not cease to be. Unborn, eternal, changeless, and ancient, the self is not killed when the body is killed. Weapons do not cut the self, fire burns it not, water wets it not, wind dries it not. This self cannot be cut, burnt, wetted, or dried up. It is eternal, all-pervading, stable, immovable, and ancient. This self, the indweller in the body of everyone, is ever indestructible, O Arjuna. Therefore, thou shouldst not grieve for any creature. Friends, we started today's session with a two-step prayer. One verse before Arjuna had seen the cosmic form on just being told by Krishna, and the rest of the verses after he had seen the cosmic form. We then heard about the nature of God and the immanence of God. Well, if God is without and within, my true nature must be divine and not this frail personality that I have been mistakenly identifying myself with for so long. Today's whole session is a strengthening of faith, not so that we can take what is heard and do nothing, but so that we can continue to live on good principles and sound footing while we exert towards having our own direct experience of our true nature. Everything in the Gita is verified by many who have trodden this path before us. And at the same time, all the teachings are also verifiable by any and all who come unto her with unflinching faith and the steady resolve to exert and verify the teachings for themselves. Next time, we look at the qualities of those who have attained this verification, as the spiritual path is long and narrow, and all who tread through it will need the same qualities. Inculcating or developing those qualities is breaking with limitation or the ties that bind. Let us see how the next time. A brief summary of what we have covered today. The theme today was God and Jiva. We started with prayer to the Lord. Arjuna's prayer, or the first prayer, was in response to what Krishna had said. And then five more that followed were after his direct experience on being granted a vision of the cosmic form. We also looked at Vasishtha's instruction to Rama, and the gist of it was faith, focus, and self-effort. Faith is running with theories that the heart believes to be true, but somehow we don't have direct verification on it. Focus is knowing what to focus on, and we were told that about too much details is not good. And to be able to have faith and to be able to have learning just enough like fuel, so we can persevere and know for ourselves, by ourselves. We then moved on to the nature of Brahman. Started with Krishna's declaration of knowing which one attains to immortality. And then five verses that followed with Arjuna's words on seeing the cosmic form again. And last of all, to a similar verse of this in the Katha Upanishad, which says, the sun does not shine there, etc., etc. Friends, we have to start on our own and by our own. And through this, these verses that we have heard in the second section, we get an idea that there is something in us that is aware and there is something in us that reacts. Whatever happens there, if that which reacts is not acted upon, and that which is aware is brought into action, we will weaken our conditioning base and also change the polarity of consciousness, where our conscious mind is made to face its larger and more infinite counterpart, or awareness. As we face the light within and keep moving, that light will illumine the path. In the third section on the immanence of God, Krishna removes all doubt in stating that all this is strung on him like beads on a string. He being the inner self, the substratum, sustainer, and animator of all. All splendor is him only. Then there is a caution again, not to get caught up in definitions at the cost of the essential. And once again, a similar verse in the Yoga Vashishta. These two verses are especially important to etch on the tablet of the heart. We need to know, but we don't need to know in theory. We need to know in experience. The theory is a hypothesis on which we work till we have our own direct experience. When to know enough is enough, so we don't get satisfied by theory. My friends, go back and read these verses again, and you will find that beautiful balance till you have your own experience. In the last chapter, which we have just covered on immortality of the soul being indestructible, changeless, unborn, indweller and all, and the self and all. And therefore, thou should not grieve for any creature. My friends, this is assurance. What can be the space that separates us from the infinite or God? If God is infinite, God is omnipresent, he is the all, he is also in all. This faith, or faith in this, will allow us to work regardless of the sharp turns on the path. Friends, thank you for joining me today. For more information, to download this video or audio, kindly visit suryadevananda.org.